everybody. This is Terry Laundrie with the T3 Observations for Sunday, July 5th. Today I want to do a discussion of the bearish downside potential, looking ahead using what I call envelope theory. I have had a number of questions generally related to that. For example, could your long-term forecast be correct going down into the latter part of 2010? Could we go back to the March lows? And I also had an interesting discussion with Peter Eliade's cycle maven 2 weeks ago. And he said that he definitely thought we were going down to the 4,000 level. And I told him that, and so he asked me about the intermediate T and so forth. And so I thought I'd gather all of these thoughts and go through in one discussion. And I've broken it up into two parts because the short-term picture uses the first chart, which is the regular daily indicator chart, but it doesn't have any T's on it. It just has the what I call envelope theory. And then the second part of the discussion takes the same envelope theory, which can be scaled up to look at the 200-year chart, and you get the same answer either way. So, and I haven't had a chance to discuss this in great detail. I think it's a very instructive that I spent a little bit of time today on it because after Friday's sharp decline, people were kind of wondering what's going on. And also, it gives you a very precise answers in the S&P as far as the S&P levels are concerned. But it's a little scary because you're trying to make you're claiming that the market in terms of the S&P gets stratified into only three stable levels, and these levels are defined in the channel as the red line around the S&P, which is where you see tops. The green line envelope, which is snakes around underneath the 55-day moving average, and that defines bottoms. And then you have the dotted black line in the middle, which is the 55-day exponential moving average. I found out that by adjusting the equations which define those three lines, I could get the tops to hit the red line, the bottoms to hit the green line, and you could ricochet off the black line. But it only came out if it was a 55-day moving average, and the exponential is the better way to go. I had a question related on, is it a simple, you can get a simple 55-day moving average by just summing up the last 55 days. But when you keep dropping off the end, it tends to wiggle a little bit. So as a result, nobody really uses anything except exponential moving averages on charts because they're very smooth. That's usually abbreviated by EMA, and then the simple one, which is not generally used, is SMA. That's what they use in at the stock charts, and you can pick out anything, and you can set a chart up for it. And if you want to, you can just set up the it's $SPX, ask them to chart it for some days, like mine, say 55-day, and pick EMA, and you'll get that black line. It'll be right, and you'll know what the number is. Well, in any case, the whole point of envelope theory is that, and I'll go into a little bit of a discussion of that, but I wanted to get out the forecast. You'll notice down at the oscillator, there's the word no new T confirmed. In order to confirm a T, you not only have to break the cash buildup line, which is really getting to be quite long now, but you actually have to come up over a previous high. When the market started up about the third week of June, the low, it did break the trend line, and it did come above the zero line. However, it didn't go above the high, which was probably the first day in June. So we're stuck in here. We don't have any T's, so it's a good time to talk about envelope theory because you can get the answer quicker on envelope theory than you can do it with the T's. But what the forecast basically is that as the S&P is coming down, it's going to find support at the black line. And if you look up in the table, you can see that I've identified what the black the close on Friday was 898. The 55-day mid envelope, which is the black line, is 896. And then you'll see that the upper envelope is 971, and the lower one is 820. Essentially, what the envelope theory says is that disregarding the fact that you didn't make the T, it says that you've got to end up at the B line, the R line, with the arrow pointing up to R, or down to the green line. The system is considered to be tri-stable. That is that the market can only find a resting place at one of those three levels. And it is a little bit unusual to come back down again. But if it comes down to the black line again, then it should find support there. Now, the interesting thing is that the S&P came down so much on Friday that it's only 2 points above the resting line. And so I would say the forecast is that you are going to make the T, and the resting point for the S&P 500 should be at 896, which is only down 2 points, which means that it might open down tomorrow, but it should not have any follow-through. And once you see that, then you know that it's found its that's the stable point for the market, and it should begin to launch its advance from there. The question came up then, well, what happens if it slips through to the downside? Well, in that case, if it doesn't hold the B, it's going to go to the G, which we know is 820. And a question comes up, is that a terrible thing to happen? Yes, because you're at the beginning stages of a bull market interpreted by the advanced decline T's, and so you shouldn't come down. You should go up. It is possible in a bull market to go down to the green line, but you should have a lot of momentum on the upside first to get things stable up. And then when you get the correction, it's not so bad because you're correcting a larger move. But it would definitely be bearish if you went down to the G level, and that's what the market decided. On the other hand, there's only two places for the market to go, either up to the R or down to the G. So it certainly is going to be quite easy to figure that out. And that's easier than figuring out the T. All you have to do is notice that the market doesn't have any carry through and it stabilizes. It could be that they're worried about earnings news, and I don't know why they're worried about the unemployment rates, but the last thing that the stock market's really interested in. They're really worried about the earnings coming forward. We'll start getting some visibility on that. So just remember, if it bounces off the B, it's gonna go up to the R, and if it sinks below the B, it's gonna go down to the G, and you won't have any trouble. Clarify this concept, you really have to have more history than I have here. So when it comes time to write the book, I expect I will take some segments of this chart because I can move it back through history. And I've adopted this notation of putting the R and the B and the G as letters showing you where they hit the tri-stable points. And so you'll see back, if you go back to May 08, so you hit the R up there, then you come down to the B, and there's some mumbling in there. You go down to the G, then you come up to the B, then you go down. You actually do touch the green line, but I didn't put a G in there. I forgot that. Then you go back up to B. No, you go down, and you go under the line, and then you go up to B. Then you see an interesting case when we're having the ongoing panic there. And this is where you can sort of get yourself into an interesting situation because your interpretation is that if in order to be at a stable point, you have to be on the green line. And you see when it fell through, as we went into October, it went way below the green line. Well, that means that can't be a low. So it went up, and then it came back down again, and then it went up a little bit. Then it came back down, and it goes just below the green line. And it tried to make a rally up to the B line, which would be the next move, because you're not supposed to be able to go below the green line. But it came up short. That's with the B with a question mark on it. Then it fell down again, and it finally found a resting point at the November low, which is pretty close to being a stable on the green line. Then it went up to the B line at in the early part of January. Now, this T is going through that. But you don't necessarily have to know that too much about the T's because you're going to figure out where the levels are going to be. Coming down the B, the interesting case was that I was looking for the double bottom there, and I thought that the hesitation close to the green line, which would have been in about the third week in February, almost all of the fourth week of February, probably the fourth week, I was looking for the double bottom there. But you see, the problem with that, making that kind of a forecast is it's not at the green line. So it goes down to March, and that's what it does, is it finds the support on the green line. So adjusting these parameters allows me to get pretty close on the S&P. Not exactly. There's always some uncertainty there, but knowing that the bottom usually has to have some kind of a rising bottoms pattern or you have to be very oversold in the arms ratio or something else, it very often is giving you enough clue to tell you whether you know whether you really want to bite for the bottom or not. As you see, you came up from the March low. You came up to the black line, fiddled around there for a while. Then went up to the R line, and then the question came up. You know, there's a T in there. Is it bullish because it's staying up? It turns out it doesn't make any difference. Once you reach the R line, and you made a top pattern, you have to go back to the B line. So now just let me digress a moment on talk about random walk theory. If you were to say that the market jumped between the red line and the green line, and you were to try to build a model showing a random walk, what you do is you just take a coin, which is two-sided, and you'd call heads the top one and tails the bottom one, say, and you'd go flipping the coin up, and you'd get these completely random jumps between the green line and the red line, and that would be an example of a random walk. In a case of a stable state jump, you can't do that with a three-headed coin, but you can take a regular die that has the 1 through 6, and you could designate 1 and 4 as say the red, and then you could take 2 and 5 and call that the black, and then you could take the 3 and the 6 and call that the G. And if you were to roll that combination over, and you could make the market jump zigzag back and forth, that would also be a form of a random walk, because it would be completely mechanical. It would get you the three primary states that I claim that the market's going to jump between, but it still has to be random walk, because the die is a random process. What makes it not a random process, and we have to understand where you're going to get your information out of this, is I interpreted back in the earlier examples that this is an energy conservation area. What we're doing is we're measuring the energy, which is sort of like the VIX number, the volatility, and we're saying that if you put all that energy to the upside, you can't go above the red boundary, and if you put it all into the downside, you can't go below the green boundary. So those are energy swing limits. It's an inherent capability for the market to go only so far. So if you catch it at an extreme, you can say that if you have hit the R button, it can't be random anymore, because you can't go to get another R. The next important jump in the stock market is down to either B or to the green. Conversely, if you're at the green, you can either go only up to the B or to the R. You can't stay at the G for any length of time. So that's the one that gets you into a process which is starting to get non-random. The other factor is that within the, which is the more detailed and more complicated issue, in the beginnings of a new bull market, you always get two bullish T's in a row, which means that the B has to support us now, because otherwise I can't get the second bullish T to carry me up to the R level and hopefully beyond if there's some momentum, so that would confirm the advanced decline T. So there are other pieces of information floating around which you can rely on. If you did go down to the G level, you would have a hard case making the fact that that T wasn't there, or was aborted or something like that. It is possible, however, for the market to go down to the G level under certain circumstances and then come back up to the B and then go back up to the R again. But at one point, you know, that's where you'd start saying, well, maybe you have a problem with the bullish case. Okay, so that's now what's interesting is as far as the 55-day moving average is concerned, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get around this hopping back and forth. And it turns out that the 55 days, what I did is I tuned this up by changing all the parameters around. And I did this five or 10 years ago, and I have seen no reason to change them. I use the 55-day moving average. It seems to get better impact of hitting the B on the button. Most technicians use the 50-day exponential moving average, but it looked better. It was more conclusive that you would hit the B. If you were waiting for a price at the B level, you got it better with a 55-day moving average. And the other parameters that are used are basically statistical ones on the amount of energy that's contained to get the swings. And except for cases when you're in a crash mode and you overrun one, or you're in a blazing new bull market where you tend to overrun the red line, that's where you might have some problems in the interpretation, but it turns out that those, from a practical standpoint, knowing you're in a raving bear market or you're a raving bull market is all you really wanted to know anyway. So going through the line itself is indicative of some valuable piece of information that is worthwhile knowing. So anyway, so that's my current status for what we call envelope theory. I'm trying to think of another name on it because it is a tri-stable type of a system. And so that'll end my first part. Then we're going to, after a break, I'm going to go and I'm going to take the transfer, this mid-channel, upper-channel, lower-channel stuff over to the long-term chart. The only difference being it takes 40 years for it to run between the channels, and so it just takes a long time. But in principle, it's the same. It's the same thing. So that concludes this phase, and we can start on the next phase after you take a look at the long-term chart. Bye.